This episode of the MGMA podcast is brought to you by Walmart Business. It's the Walmart you love, now for business. Get everything you need for your staff and patients in one place. Enjoy big savings on health and safety products, cleaning supplies, over-the-counter medications, and much more. And don't forget the break room snacks. Create a free account today and start shopping at business.walmart.com. That's business.walmart.com. Introducing First Call Triage, your ultimate remote medical staffing solution. With their office hours nurse triage line, front office services, including appointment scheduling and insurance verification, and back office services, managing medication refills and prior authorizations, First Call Triage can streamline your practice's operations. Plus, their remote patient monitoring and chronic care management ensure comprehensive patient care. So make the right call. First Call Triage is the first and only call you need for efficient, cost-effective, and high-quality medical staffing. So visit their website at firstcalltriage.com to revolutionize your practice. Again, that's firstcalltriage.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of Women in Healthcare Podcast with Medical Group Management Association. My name is Adrienne Lloyd, and it is my honor to be here today with Stephanie Mercado from the NAQHU, which is the National Association for Healthcare Quality. Stephanie is the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director, and NAQHU is really the leader in development of industry standard healthcare quality competencies and certification in healthcare quality, and they're based in Chicago. Stephanie brings more than 20 years of healthcare industry experience, and she has implemented innovations and introduced methodologies to research and define standardized competencies for the healthcare profession. Currently, there are over 15,000 certified professionals in healthcare quality. And most recently, Stephanie has been nominated as one of the top 100 most influential people in healthcare by Modern Healthcare, and also has been named as one of the top 25 women leaders in healthcare. And Stephanie is also a proud hockey mom to her two sons, and she and her husband enjoy spending weekends at their many, many hockey tournaments. So Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us today. It's just a pleasure to have you. And I'd love to hear these, being nominated as the top most influential and top women leaders in healthcare. Like, how does that feel? And tell us a little bit about, kind of that experience as well as just your role at NAQHU and what you guys are really kind of focusing on and working on in 2024.
Well, thank you, Adrienne. I really appreciate you including me in this opportunity. So winning the top 100 most influential executives in healthcare award was quite the honor. And as you mentioned, also being recognized also as a top 25 women leader, both by Modern Healthcare, was just extraordinary and very humbling, in fact. I think the big takeaway here is not just that this is an award and recognition for me, but that the recognition was really due to the fact that NAQHU is at the forefront of elevating the profession and advancing the discipline of quality and safety. When I think about the place on that list and the importance of that, I think that, quality, is moving to the forefront, and that it is more important than ever. And I think that the recognition by Modern Healthcare of the place that quality and safety really occupy from a leadership perspective was very, very important. When I think about why that recognition occurred, I, really go back to the fact that, NAQHU has been leading the field, bringing net new knowledge to the field, and has done that by creating a healthcare quality competency framework that is a universal framework intended to elevate the contribution of individuals and teams as they are working to pursue quality and safety goals. This also gives us a lot of data about what is going on in the industry and helps us identify some rate limiting factors to moving the quality and safety agenda further and faster down the field. I also think another reason that we were recognized by Modern Healthcare is really due to the fact that we have been growing in our reach and relevance with the CPHQ, which is the Certified Professional in Healthcare Quality, as you mentioned, held by more than 15,000 people today. Just a few years ago, that number was about half of what it is today. And I think that those individuals and organizations who are recognizing the CPHQ are really recognizing that quality and safety utilized as a business strategy can be the path forward.
No, I love that. And, you know, I think it's gained such, you know, extreme prominence. And I'd love to, you know, one of the main things people think about when they hear quality improvement tools is kind of Lean and Six Sigma, and those tend to be the most popular buzzwords a lot of times. And I know it's really been a huge factor in my own career and working as a leader with organizations. And I think I was first exposed to those processes back, probably 2005, 2008, so a long time ago. But I know there's many, many more tools than that. Could you give a little bit more of an overview as well about why you feel those like process improvement tools and strategies are so critical in healthcare and really driving the ongoing change that we continue to face and will continue to face in healthcare?
Sure, absolutely. Well, let me just frame this up a little bit. So I think that as we've looked at the quality and safety agenda and the quality and safety journey, what we observe is that in the early days, quality and safety was really focused on regulatory and compliance, jump through the hoop, check the box, pass the test. A decade or longer ago, the quality improvement initiatives really took root in the market and were really important as a stepping stone in the quality and safety journey. I would add that today, quality is much more than compliance, regulatory mandates, and even improvement. It includes all of those things, but it's much more. So when we think about quality and safety, we reference our healthcare quality competency framework as really the tools and methods to achieve quality and safety, high quality, safe, and affordable healthcare. And we look at concepts including, as I mentioned, regulatory accreditation, PPI, but we're also looking at advanced health data analytics. We're looking at concepts in population health and care transitions. We're looking at quality leadership, quality review, accountability, payment models. There is patient safety, safety science, safety culture. There's just so much involved in advancing the quality and safety agenda. So that's sort of, you know, framing it up in terms of our view of what it is. And I would also say that when we talk about the tools and how we put those to work, I look at this and say that quality can most certainly be used as a business strategy, but the quality tools are very, very effective, and they really allow us to have standard and reliable methods to understand and address opportunities and challenges in healthcare. We know that a carpenter, for example, will come in with a toolkit, and they are not sort of walking into the job sort of saying, oh, I think I need a tool. I better go create it so right. that I can, you know, fix that thing that someone's hired me to work on. They come with their toolkit, and that's what people in quality and safety who are sufficiently trained in quality and safety do. And those quality tools can do things like improve processes, reduce waste, manage and identify and manage risk, minimize risk, and a lot more. So when I think of the quality tools, I think that they're really an asset to the quality professionals, people working in quality and safety, to just be more effective problem solvers. And we have our fair share of challenges in healthcare. So it's good to have a ready tool belt with people who know how to use those tools to affect positive change.
Absolutely. And I think too, you know, having a lot of groups that may be listening as administrators or physician executives may not be fortunate to have kind of the resources to have their own quality, you know, team member who's really focused in this effort. But it is such, I think, a gift to have and utilize these tools in really creating both analyzing situations, kind of breaking down the pieces that need to be improved, and actually strategically kind of tackling those issues. As you look ahead to kind of emerging challenges in healthcare, are there a couple that stick out to you that you really feel like these applications are going to be most beneficial? I know you spoke to several things that you guys are already involved with. Are there a couple that really come to mind?
Sure. I mean, quality and safety as a mindset and as a method, I think, can solve most any challenge in healthcare. But top of mind today would be topics and issues around social determinants of health, population health, workflows for care transitions. All of these things are incredibly complex in and of themselves, but are addressable and solvable if we have the right toolkit. And I just want to pick up on something you mentioned a moment ago, which was, you know, maybe not everyone in a practice is able to have someone dedicated to quality. And I would say, I understand. And that's okay. Yeah. That doesn't mean you can't do quality and safety and really activate that in a much more meaningful way. So, and that is why, you know, NACU is expanding its scope, to include, those individuals working not just in the profession. We're still very committed, very, focused on the profession. Okay. But we're very committed to working with people who are touching the discipline of quality and safety. And those are going to be people not in your full-time roles in quality and safety. Those are going to be your clinical practice leaders and others who are involved in data collection, improvement projects, meeting new regulatory and payment requirements. Those individuals armed with some simple skills and built competencies, I think, can make a big difference, even if you don't have the benefit of a vast infrastructure and quality and safety. I will also add one more piece of information, which is really that healthcare executives themselves are really advancing and investing in quality and safety. And so I would say this isn't just for your team. This is for you. At NACU, you know, one of the key phrases we like to use, which is very impactful, is the Q is you. Right? It's everybody. There's nobody it doesn't affect. And for that reason, we all need to be prepared to do our best work and make our contribution in quality and safety.
Yeah, I agree. And I found too that some the tools were very helpful. I think all of us, and we're going to touch on this a little bit too, but, you know, can seem to be, you know, there's certain challenges that, you know, at face value, as you begin to look at them, can just become such huge opportunities, but also a little overwhelming. And I think that's where having some of these tools can really be helpful to, you know, break down kind of what and define what those first steps are. Are there tools or strategies, and, you know, how would you advise leaders to look at these quality tools, or just the strategies and philosophies to really look at the team dynamics and improve problem solving with their teams? Are there things that you have found helpful for yourself, or things that you've found a lot of other leaders kind of tap into?
Sure. One of my favorite tools in terms of both laying out and beginning to address the situation, but also for bringing a team together, is an SBAR. Mm-hmm. SBAR stands for Situation Background Analysis and Recommendation. And I find it to be a very effective framework to just unpacking an issue and beginning to identify, you know, what the solution will be, and then making progress towards that. It's also a very neutralizing tool from an emotional perspective, because it's very methodical in its nature, and has a way to bring people together. I will also say that at NACU, we use SBARs a lot, even as we're making our internal business decisions. And so as we think about doing that, We have some terms, you know, sometimes you do a full blown S bar and other times it's just a skinny S bar, right? Right. Just like high and tight, you know, what's the situation? What's right. the background? Give me a little analysis. What do you think we should do? And also for posterity to have that documentation so that in 6 months or a year or 2 or 3 years, you think, why do we do it this way? It's written down.
Yeah.
And I find that to be very helpful. So I think that that is a great tool. Another one that I would recommend would be maybe the FMEA failure mode effect analysis. Mm-hmm. So if you have a team of people who are looking at, you know, maybe making a big decision, and we have some people who are for the decision and others who are against the decision, you know, that is a tool that sort of says, okay, well, let's think about what could go wrong here. And let's sort of preemptively identify those issues and plan for them. And again, that kind of just makes everyone feel a little more comfortable that they're, position or objectives have objections have been heard and that they will be addressed. So these are comforting tools for people that really move the business objectives down the field a lot faster.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think one of the things that's been most beneficial of the tools when I've seen them used with others and have used them myself too, is the ability to kind of diffuse sometimes the tension that can occur with, you know, as you're creating change. And sometimes that's just due to confusion. And sometimes it is, as you mentioned, the fear of the unknown or the fear of, you know, the worry about the what ifs. And a lot of times there is real validity in those what ifs or the we need to think about. And I think that's a great, it sounds like a great tool to be able to apply to that.
Yeah, I would just add one more too. I think especially when we're in a situation where there's such dynamic change going on in healthcare that is affecting everyone's roles, everyone's responsibilities, and what their expectations are every day, both as an individual and working as a team. Another great tool is the RASIC. RASIC is identifying, you know, who's responsible, accountable, who's the decision maker, et cetera. And that's really helpful. NAQ has doubled its staff size over the past handful of years. And, you know, I think as we did that 2022, you know, for us, I thought, oh, this is the, or 2021, it was the year of role confusion, right? And I thought, oh, how are we ever going to resolve this? And it was much more straightforward once we put the quality tools to work and really, again, had that neutralizing framework for just walking through and unpacking roles and responsibilities. So we live by those quality tools at NAQ, and they've taken us a long way.
No, I love that. And I think a lot of times, you know, people really just want to understand what success looks like. And there's a lot of confusion around what does that look like? Sometimes it's at the organization level, sometimes based on an initiative or even down to the role. So being able to clearly identify, you know, who's responsible for what, and as much as you can ever fully contain that in any one tool, but yeah. So one of the hot topics that has, you know, continues to come up is how is AI going to impact healthcare? Are there tools or strategies as you think about, you know, are there ways that you guys are already incorporating that into what you do, or are there tools or strategies that you think would be most helpful as people start to identify where they might want to apply AI tools, technology, or, you know, other things to just new healthcare paradigms as they're shifting?
Yeah, I was at the CMS quality conference, Qualcomm, last week, I believe that it was, maybe 2 weeks ago now. And that was a big topic. And they had a keynote on that topic. And most certainly it's showing up in the headlines, you know, every day. So it's something that all of us are going to have to get our arms around, not only in terms of some of the business processes sort of behind the scenes, but everything that's affecting patient care. Mm-hmm. And so again, a quality tool from my perspective that would be great for that is, you know, ask and answering the question, what could possibly go wrong here, which is probably a lot, right? What are the unintended consequences? I think there's something, a lot that could go great, but we're in uncharted territory, and that requires really proactive critical thinking. And so I would recommend the FMEA failure mode effect analysis to say, all right, let's unpack this. And I also think that it's something that should be ongoing. We don't do this sort of a one and done and say, okay, we crossed that off the list. Viewing any of these activities and advancing quality and safety, again, as a to-do is sort of missing the point, right? It should be an accelerant to increase the velocity of your progress. And they should be living and breathing documents because the environment's changing. So we just come back to that FMEA and take a fresh look at it and see, you know, how it's continuing to evolve as the environment is evolving. We got to really keep that front of mind.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most beautiful things about embracing the philosophy of using the tools or just in general kind of process improvement is really shifting to that continuous improvement. And I think that that also takes some of the stress off of getting it completely right the first time, you know, getting it 80% of the way there, sometimes even 50% of the way there to actually make progress and then continuing to implement changes. And
yeah, absolutely. I think that it's very easy to sort of get stuck because the change or the task seems so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've appreciated about being very intimately involved in quality and working with NACU's board of directors who mm-hmm. are leaders in quality in their own right is that when you adopt an improvement mindset, it allows you to iterate, right? So it's not about winning or losing a battle. It's about staying in the game. And to stay in the game, you know, it's all about improvement because the game and the environment around you is constantly changing. So these are really good tools that can help people stay in the game and hopefully thrive.
Well, and I think it's too, it's just so it often feels as leaders, as individuals in healthcare that we should know everything. We should be able to put all the pieces together. And a lot of times that's just not possible, you know, from where we stand today in any, you know, one scenario, there's so much that's going to continue to change and shift and there's just no way to know. And so having just this approach, I think is really helpful to let people put some structure to it, identify what they know, take action, and then move from there. So along those lines of kind of shifting gears a little bit, as you think about kind of managing the change, managing the stress, you know, in the rapid face of that and the uncertainty, you know, how have these tools been helpful for you? We've talked a lot about at work, but even outside of the office framework, if you will, to kind of manage stress, continuing to just be resilient as a leader. And you know, we talked about your hockey mom status already. And so, you know, it is a lot as a woman, as a leader, as a parent, as, you know, so any individual in healthcare, there is a lot. Are there personal strategies that you've used these tools or otherwise to really just help support you in kind of pursuing what's most important to you in life and in all those areas?
For sure. So let me go through a couple of them. So, sure. You know, I think everybody is pretty stressed out these days, right? And there's a lot of anxiety just about a lot of unknowns, whether they are environmental or political or, you know, work related. There's a lot of uncertainty. And so one of the things that I think about is, you know, really trying to put relative weight on what those stressors are, because sometimes you could kind of take them and they just become like a clump of anxiety. It's almost hard to unpack.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I have found helpful is to sort of discover and sort of say, well, what is bothering me? I know something's bothering me. I feel anxious, but what is it? And literally to make a list, right, of things that are potential concerns at work or potential concerns with my kids or, you know, in other ways at home, and sort of say, well, is it that, you know, I think that my kid isn't going to make the hockey team? No, that's not it. Okay. Well, is it because they're not going to get into the school that they want? No, I don't think that's it. Right. And you can kind of go through and just like literally check things off. And sometimes you'll say, yeah, maybe that thing is my concern. Right. And then you can kind of zero in on it and address it. But I think that, I tell my kids, I say, you know, sometimes you get all this anxiety and you, it's almost like a bear's rattling in the bushes. You're like, I hear a rattling in the bushes. Yeah. It must be a bear. I'm like, it might just be a bunny rabbit. And so take a minute and sort of figure out how to apply relative weight to all of those things. So it doesn't kind of drag you down, because it's easy for the weight, of collective anxiety to just be debilitating. And so we have to work our way through it.
No, I agree. It's funny. Sometimes the things that we know may help us, we resist. And so for me, one of the things that journaling is something I've just recently gotten back into. I'm still not very consistent with it, but I know that it's been helpful for me too. And I do sense that similar amount of just like, why am I anxious? Am I worried? What is underneath this?
What
And
is underneath it? And sometimes that's hard, right? You should just know that. Like, if something's wrong or you're feeling uncomfortable, it seems like it should be obvious to you what it is. But I think there's just so much going on, and the world is moving so fast that sometimes you need just like a moment to do a methodical unpacking of that. So, and then to your point on resilience, I think it's so important. I think in any environment at this point, and particularly in healthcare, we have a lot of challenges coming through from the increase in changes in healthcare delivery and the increase in the volume of baby boomers who are going to be coming in and consuming high consumers of resources. The cost is a lot. Most certainly, keeping that affordable is important. And then workforce cliff, right? We're all dealing with issues related to capacity and making sure that we have the right people in the right roles and even enough people in roles. And so I think resilience is really important. And I also say, I teach that to my kids as well. My son had a challenge in school the other day, and something got switched with an assignment, and he had to redo a bunch of work. And oh my God, it was this big thing. And we spent a long time that night sort of working through it and, let him process what's going on. And we sort of acknowledge and appreciate the challenge that that is. And, then I said to him, listen, you just got punched in the gut. What are you going to do now? Right? What's the plan? Because, you can stay there and be knocked down, or you can get up and go solve the problem. And I think that that resilience, is important, to teach the of it than we even do. And I think that it's important for us to remember that too, because everything's not going to go perfect all the time. And being positive and optimistic and resilient, I think, are three key traits to have to both survive and to thrive in this very dynamic and complex environment.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's it's something that continues to be a challenge. Myself, I know many, many others. It's shifting into that. Things are going to happen. All these things are happening outside of our control in healthcare. They're happening inside our work units in healthcare, without presumably outside of our control. And so as they happen, it's taking it and saying, okay, like how, what now? What now? What can I do now? Which I do think is where. We talked a lot about the tools, but I do think some of those tools, really applying them, it takes some of that personal impact away, if you will, and like moves you towards action versus it feeling kind of where you're stuck or overwhelmed of just that you're not say victim, but you're kind of in that mentality of like, I don't know how to fix this. And so any of these tools or journaling or writing down whatever is helpful to really move you forward into the like taking back a piece of action and to some degree control over the next one next step. Like, what's the next step?
Well, I think that that's a really good point. Just kind of breaking it down and keeping it simple, because if you are going to take on fixing everything, you're going to lose, right? Like that's not possible. But if you can take ownership and accountability to say, well, what would be one thing that's within my control? What is one thing that I can make better today or better, hopefully for longer, and do that. Right? Because I think that that's going to fill your cup. Your cup is going to be depleted if your, only objective is to tackle an insurmountable challenge, right? You got to chip away at that sort of one step at a time with eye on the prize, whatever your prize is, right? Head in that direction, keep going, don't stop, but just celebrate those small wins and focus on them, because that's going to be the path forward.
No, I agree. I agree. Well, what is one thing that you wish you would have known or perhaps approached differently earlier in your career, career-wise or life-wise, that might have made a difference?
Yeah, I think one of the things I've been reflecting on lately is that timing is everything. And I think that that's true for professional life and also for home life. you know, I think that when we talk about from the professional perspective, you know, and in terms of those insurmountable challenges, right? You know, NACU has really big ambitions for having a positive effect in making sure that the workforce is ready to advance quality and safety objectives. And that includes making sure that healthcare executives are taking ownership of their training, of their teams, and really continue to be focused on what it's going to take to get their people ready to do that work. And that's not, that's a big job for us, right? Because not only does everyone have a different opinion of how that could be done, but a lot of people have a different view of what quality and safety even is. Right. And they have different sensibilities for quality and safety. So we've taken on a big opportunity here to kind of bring shape to the industry, bring shape to the category of quality and safety. And so on my things that I've learned is, you know, timing is everything, and we're going to try again. But sometimes as we activate all those different strategies, there's something that says, this one isn't quite ready yet, or the market isn't ready yet. And so it doesn't mean we stop. It means we take a beat and we sort of move, around whatever that issue is, or barrier, and, you know, kind of keep progressing, and things will come back. There have been many opportunities over the years where I thought, oh gosh, like maybe this one, I'll never get it. But we kept our eye on the prize, and somehow, some way, you know, the barriers get resolved or they get removed, either because of our efforts or something that right. we didn't affect at all. And so I think patience is a virtue. Patience and action combined, I think, are good. But I think patience is a virtue in that. And it's also too, I was chatting at the rink last night with some hockey parents, and they were talking about one of them had a little one who just would not, you know, participate in potty training. And they said, oh, we went to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician said, I've never sent a kid to college who wasn't potty trained. And so, right. Like they're going to figure it out. It's going to work. It's maybe not today, maybe not on your schedule, but it's going to happen. And so I think that timing is everything, at work and at home. And so just, you know, kind of try your best to go with that flow and affect what you can, and, you know, adapt to the rest.
Yeah. I agree. One particular, I had a project many, probably almost two decades ago, I was on where we were really trying to go across a lot of different practices, standardize both our systems, our software, our physician workflows. And I actually left that role and then went to another specialty and then came back 4 years later. The project was essentially in the same place as where I had left it. And we thought it should have actually been well implemented pretty quickly after I left. And you know, what actually came through was there was just a lot of underlying components that still needed to be kind of worked through. And a lot of that was, some of it was process and structure and, you know, software vendor and those kinds of things in terms of technical specifications. But a lot of it was just the people's readiness for change. Mm-hmm. And I think that's too where, as you said, they still accomplished a lot of different things towards those goals, you know, during that 4 years that I was off doing my other thing. But, you know, that full initiative wasn't ready to kind of all come together until, you know, 4 years later. And so to some, it may have seemed like it failed, but it really was just able to be better than it ever could have been had we, you know, kind of pushed through it. And so I think it's not always saying, okay, you know, it's a failure or we're stopping forever. It's maybe we need to be creative. I think the patient's action, as you were saying, that, you know, that really is key. I think the creativity is the other thing. And that's these tools, I think, are great. Just the process and innovation strategies in general to really extract that creativity, both from ourselves and then from our teams, too, because I think ultimately a lot of us, we really hold the solutions and our teams hold the solutions to what can be changed to make it better.
Absolutely. A mentor once told me that when you feel like you're going way too slow and way too fast all at the same time, you're probably going just the right
way. Right.
Yeah. So that has been very comforting to me because, you know, those feelings are very real. And so it sort of lets you know that it's okay. You can proceed and you're doing good work. So I've really valued that input.
I love that. Stephanie, we could talk for hours, but just to close us out, what's one thing that you're excited about for 2024?
Gosh, I only get to pick one thing. I'm excited about
or
a lot
multiple.
Of things.
That's fine. What are you excited about for 2024?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So a few things. So sort of from a big picture perspective, I'm really excited that quality and safety as a category is being elevated in the marketplace. I think that people are beginning to come back to it in a way that that's needed right now. And I'm really excited to see many more organizations adopting the CPHQ certification and our competency framework as the way that they execute quality and safety and the way that they're supporting their teams. We have organizations like Kaiser Permanente and Northwestern University and Augusta Health and, you know, King's Daughter. So large and small organizations, including even the Veterans Health Administration is hopping on the path and really working to advance individuals and teams. So I'm super excited about that. And I'm very excited to continue that work and get even more momentum behind it. So that's really exciting to me. Another thing that's really exciting, we always look forward to in the fall. We have two big events. One is our NACU Next, which is our virtual conference. It's just so great. The energy that we've created in that event is outstanding. And so we spend a lot of time curating the content and making sure it's just, you know, the right content. And then Healthcare Quality Week is in the fall. So that's in October. And I'm always amazed and impressed with the amount of people who are participating. You know, a few years ago, we had handfuls of people who were engaged, and then we had hundreds, and then we had thousands. And now we have tens of thousands of people participating in Healthcare Quality Week. So that's always really energized week. And I love the opportunity to help NACU move people in the direction of quality and safety.
That I love all those. Well, I'm excited for you guys and what you'll continue to bring for the just the overall advancement for healthcare. And thank you so much for taking your time to be with us today. We really appreciate having you. And for those of our listeners, we will put Stephanie's information in the links so that you can follow her on LinkedIn. I know I saw some of the updates as you're sharing what NACU is doing and some of the other events that you're participating in too, just continuing to share with all of us. I think it's so fantastic. So thank you so much for your time and being with us today.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. And I really appreciate the opportunity. And I think you guys are doing amazing work. So I look forward to following your podcast as well.
Sounds great. Thank you.
The popular buzzword we've been seeing everywhere is AI. But what we all want to know is how we can implement and use it to our advantage when it comes to improving margins, accelerating cash flow, and optimizing staff performance. There's a one-stop shop using cloud-based predictive analytics. MGMA Analytics is your AI-enabled tool that upscales technology you've already been paying for, so you can silo your disparate systems and make data-backed business decisions. Visit mgma.com/analytics and see how AI can revolutionize your finances and operations. Again, visit mgma.com/analytics today.